Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Thank you, Brian Brown. It is Tuesday, April 28th, 2020, in the year of the tweet, as our leader Brian would say, and the year of the global pandemic. With us this morning and all alone in the Gene Boss studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is our master of the virtual mix and Zoom modulating sound engineer, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Glad to see everybody's on the computer this morning. I can see all your smiling faces.
And out of the land of magnolias and stuck in her home on the island of Madrones comes the analytic academic social worker poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes, Lynn Kerrigan. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. Good morning. You make me tired to think about all that. I've been enjoying doing nothing for a long time. It's not been that hard.
It makes you part of a large and growing group. Yeah. For a long way.
Why not?
Yeah. For a long-range view, we're talking centuries, coupled with the grinding wheels of justice. The grinding wheels of justice.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have it.
Island historian and guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning, how are you?
Great. Can you share with us any reassuring notes from history for this time of pandemania and White House imitations of Nero in Rome?
Well, from the pandemanium, that fast five times, right? Yes, point of view. What's really fascinating to me is with the 1980 flu epidemic, because I've been doing some work with that and working with Nancy Bristow, historian at EPS, who wrote a book about the 1918 pandemic. And actually, it wasn't over until 1921. You know, we think of it as 1918, and that was the peak of it. But it continued to come back into 1919 and 1920. And so whatever you see right now, we're in for a long haul, not necessarily of shutdowns and that kind of thing. But until there's a vaccine developed, we're going to see this reemerging. We're going to see waves of this into the next year, year and a half, 2 years. Not that that's reassuring, but at one level it is, knowing that, hey, we're in this and we need to be serious about it.
Well, and it's probably going to create a whole lot of changes in our culture, which may be for the better.
Well, it already has. Look at us.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Well, and also the fashion statement, you know, with the mask.
Sort of thing that we're dealing with. Yeah, we're doing this all online.
That's right.
And it's working. You know,
life online.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's a new reality, if you will, and it's social distancing, but at least I can see all your smiling or frowning faces.
And one of those highly visible on our Zoom screen this morning is the phantom editor of Indivisible Vachon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration. He's Kevin Jones. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, how are you?
Good. And when do you think Indivisible nationally is going to perform an electoral coup d'etat in the Senate?
Well, I can tell you that we're definitely working on that. And we actually, on Monday next week at 7 o'clock, we have another webinar telling people how we're going to do that. And if our listeners are interested, they can actually email me at kevin@indivisiblevachon.org. And I will get you an invitation so you can hear about how we're doing it. It's awesome right now in Montana. Former Senator Bullock is running neck and neck with current Senator Daines, and Montana is now competitive to flip into the blue column. So isn't that awesome?
Yeah, that's impressive. And I am Susan McCabe, this week's moderator on the Democratic leadership role of the Brown Briefly. I'm also host of Voice of Vashon's Real Talk Show, which follows the Briefly at noon. And I will feature Michelle Storms today. She's the newest executive director of Washington State's American Civil Liberties Union. She's going to talk to us about how they're continuing to battle for the rights of all of us despite the pandemic. So, you want to start today with the cockamamie COVID cure proposals and outrageous conspiracy theories about the pandemic?
Did you see that Georgia men actually injected themselves with disinfectant? Georgia men, such as they were.
What happened?
I think they had bad outcomes of their disinfectant attempts. I don't remember the details exactly, but it wasn't good.
Wow.
Does anybody remember the details?
Yeah.
I haven't seen them.
Thrown out the paper.
Kevin?
I don't remember the details, but somebody equated that to embalming, that procedure.
Yeah.
I equate it to evolution.
Darwin. Darwin wins again.
Very Darwinian, man.
Yes. Wow. So embalming yourself before you're actually dead is kind of like searching for living eulogies, but forgetting to stay awake for them.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep, that's Darwinian. Yeah,
I did a little research into the suggested cures that's coming from the administration. And the other comment was that injecting Clorox or Lysol into your body is what people do as one means of killing themselves. I mean, literally, it is that serious.
It's a toxic.
So do not do that at home.
Mix
do not
of
try
gases.
This at home.
Yeah.
Don't drink it. Don't inject it. Don't use a suppository. Whatever.
Don't mix it with something else and then be surprised when it releases gas.
But Susan, I do have. I did some investigative journalism on why we might be hearing some of these things coming out of the White House. If you're curious about,
what did you find?
Why? There's a reason.
Well,
let's hear it.
Well, yes, and it's a follow the money thing. So it turns out that Trump himself. So just in Politico last Friday, let me set the stage here. Trump has taken on debt from China in 2012. One of his real estate partners refinanced one of his New York buildings for almost $1 billion. And apparently the debt is like $211 million to the state-owned Bank of China. Okay, so in other words, he, the king of debt, right, self-anointed, who's got to leverage his position right now, to avoid bankruptcy. Right now he doesn't have contractors that he cannot pay anymore, so he's got to go big. So and he's got a whole family, right, who's really good at this. Like Ivanka, I understand, got some clothing products licensed to sell in China during a trade discussion with China, surprisingly. So anyway, so you know, Trump has got to get some bucks behind him, and so you know, he's got the bully pulpit. So this hydrochloroquine, right, he's hawking it like he owns the company. But interestingly, the Huffington Post says Trump only has a small personal financial interest in Sanofi, which is the French drug maker that makes
is that right?
Hydroxychloroquine, yeah, a small. but here's the shocker. Sanofi's largest shareholders include a mutual fund company run by a major Republican donor, Ken Fisher. And that's not all. Trump's three family trusts, as of last year, each had investments in a mutual fund whose largest holding was?
China?
Sanofi.
Who makes
the drug.
Wow.
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, there's even more. According to the Motley Fool, Mylan, a company in West Virginia, is cranking up their production of hydroxychloroquine. And, of course, West Virginia is a Trump-loving state. So I think maybe we're seeing some relationships here that might shed some light on why we're hearing these crazy things.
Unbelievable. You know, craven self-interest and mendacity.
Colorful, yes.
You guys have to remember, it was just sarcasm.
Yeah. Yeah. For, to
it
the
certainly was.
To the reporters.
No, I watched that video, and there was not a tiny note of sarcasm in his
voice. He's confusing sarcasm with lying.
Good point.
I wonder if he even knew he was lying. That my fear is that he really believed what he said. In any case, yes, well, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, here's an alternative theory, not to dismiss the one you just put out there. But, you know, the trouble is the hydroxychloroquine gig is drying up, right? I mean, literally in the VA test where they administered hydroxychloroquine to people who had the virus, twice the number who died had taken the drug, the ones who took the drug died at twice the rate of those who did not. Okay. So in other words, yes, it is a really, really bad thing to do. And it's a sad thing, but it is really bad. Our listener needs to know this. But that gig is drying up. So now what's he doing? I bet he's buying stock in Clorox and Lysol and the company that makes that little UVC light wand that disinfects. Yeah. So I think we need his tax returns. That's all.
There's a UVC light wand.
Oh yeah.
I must have one.
Yeah, it's for backpackers who don't carry the iodine tablets or the pump, and apparently it's a little wand. And what I read about that is, yeah, it disinfects water. It is highly deadly if you are exposed to too much of it, and it turns out our atmosphere filters out all of that wavelength of light. So we don't get it here on Earth unless we, produce it in a wand. And Trump is suggesting you take one of those wands and, like, well, you mentioned suppositories earlier. yeah, that's the guy. That's the advice we're getting.
Encourage him to test that, Truman.
Yeah. Him first.
I was going to say that the new septic systems that are putting in modern homes have a UV light that goes between the two tanks, and the effluence goes through that light. So it irradiates all the effluence as it goes through to kill all the bugs before it goes out into your drain field. That's one of the new ones.
Not to be confused with the bidet.
No, that's a little different. Yeah. Yeah, but it does. It works, I guess. So.
I heard that some cleaning organizations or robotics organizations are creating robots that can clean public places with UVC light at night when there's no one around. Mm. So the UVC light can kill germs on surfaces, but you don't want to use it on human bodies.
Mm. That sounds very sinister.
Yeah. Get War of the Worlds.
Robots at night.
It does. It's creepy. Come on.
Well, I Lynn, where you're going with that is given how deadly this light is, if the robots decided to get together and turn on humanity,
obviously,
I'm not going to do it when they're doing that cleaning myself.
Obviously. Just giving them the weapons, is that it?
Just another crazy conspiracy theory. Chalk it up to that, maybe.
So, well, I mean, there's some things that are just stupid. Shouldn't do them. They're stupid.
Yeah, I used to work for a product testing organization, and we wrote use and test manuals. And my motto then was, we can test for safety, we cannot test for stupidity. Mm. They never let me write that down.
I say you can. They start off without having all their fingers. One of the tests.
Okay, so we've got all these weird cockamamie cure proposals and conspiracy theories about, for instance, Bill Gates trying to commit genocide with family planning. What can we do about these off the rails ideas. How do we combat those? Is there anything in history, Bruce, that would help us?
Well, I mean, those kind of conspiracy theories, cockamamie sort of treatments have always been around. I mean, it's nothing new. What's interesting to me is that, you know, the internet, social media sort of gives them an avenue of expression they've never had before. They've always been,
fringe.
Cards, flybills, I mean, you know, person-to-person contact, that kind of stuff. I mean, that stuff's always been out there, but it's never had the wide exposure, and it's never been exposed to the public in the way that it is right now. I take a great deal of sort of comfort from watching the poll numbers with how people are responding to President versus Dr. Fauci and Dr. Bricks. It's clearly, you know, 80-85% of the people believe what they're hearing from, you know, the disease control experts. And 20% are believing what they hear from the president. So 20% can go out and inject themselves or stick lights up their arms. and that's going to happen. But at the same time, you know, I think it's very comforting that the American people, you know, 80%, 85% of the American people are believing what the scientists are telling them. And I think what's going to come out of this is a resurgence of sort of American faith in science that was tried in the 1990s and early 2000s. It was under attack for a variety of reasons, some self-imposed by scientists, but some by sort of right-wing and left-wing extremists. But my sense is people are coming back to their senses for a large part. Not everybody, you know, there's going to be, you know, sort of a crazy element out there. But, you know, I see it as a good thing right now. And I think my own interpretation is Trump sort of his personal need for approval that sort of drove him to these daily press conferences in exchange for not being able to have rallies has actually been, you know, a positive thing because it's shown people how unstable of a genius he really is, and how crazy some of his ideas are. And you've got very credible scientists right next to him correcting him. I think it's a very powerful sort of shift that's going to occur in terms of how Americans view science.
He's just so unfiltered, you know. He will just say anything he's thinking about and confuses it with policy. You know, is embarrassing himself, and everybody is saying that now, you know, the poor guy, you know.
Including his staff. I think they have back on his nightly broadcast for that very reason.
It's
not a political advantage, even though he's getting more airtime than Joe Biden. And that brings me to the topic of the presidential campaign. Where are we with that? What do you all know about the Dems convention, how and when that's going to happen?
Or if.
Where are we now?
Or if it's going to happen.
I don't know.
The last thing I read about the convention is they've still got it planned. I believe they delayed it a few weeks. And now they're talking about whether they're going to do a virtual convention or an actual convention. And my sense is, I don't think things are going to clear up. I mean, yeah, we'll start being able to open things up in the ways that George has done. George is doing it way too early. But the kinds of things that they're doing, you know, every restaurant, every other table is closed, 6-foot distances, I mean, things like that. I mean, we're going to start to see that slow return to some kind of quasi-normalcy. But it's going to be into next year before we see anything, or until there's a vaccine, before we see anything like there was, you know, even 3 months ago.
So Bruce, my question is, do they really need to have a convention? I mean, as long as it's not contested, who the candidates are going to be, I mean, why do they need to have it?
I mean, you know, yeah, they don't. I mean, in a sense, I mean, they could do a convention like we're doing this. I mean, it's really just counting of ballots. It could be a virtual convention. my sense is, again, you know, my sense is Joe Biden's sort of the anointed candidate, but Bill Biden has some very serious sort of weaknesses as a candidate. And whether the Dems are going to deal with that or not, or run with him and a strong vice president, my sense is it's going to move pretty quickly. And so there's not a need for a convention.
I disagree. I think a convention is something that the American people need to see, one, to see and hear the vice presidential candidate, two, to get an idea of the Dems' platform for the campaign, and to really build up some groundswell for that, get Bernie Sanders out there visibly supporting and Elizabeth Warren visibly supporting and helping to create the platform. So there's some excitement around the Democratic field and how people are going to vote, get out to vote, give them a reason to get out to vote. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, yeah. We assume that Joe Biden's the candidate and he's kind of boring and okay, my vote doesn't count because of the Electoral College, blah, 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 blah. Then we got Trump reelected.
Yeah, and then I didn't mean to say there doesn't need to be a convention. There doesn't need to be a physical, everybody in the same building kind of convention. No, I don't think that'll happen. I think a virtual convention will happen. And for all the reasons you're talking about, Susan, I think it's important. But a physical convention of everybody gathering together in a convention hall and sort of rubbing shoulders and shaking hands, I think that's not going to happen. Let's hope it may happen for the Republicans, and that may be another Charles Darwin Award.
Yeah. So the question I was asking was a technical question. Do they technically have to have the convention? But the one thing I didn't think about was the platform. I mean, the platform was also approved at that point, right? So then technically they do have to have something, whether it's virtual or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, hate to see the precedent set, you know, where we didn't have anything, where it was vague or where, you know, anything was left open to, I don't know, interpretation that we could have and should have clarified and kind of come together about. You know, that's the whole purpose of it to me.
Kevin?
Yeah, I can tell you that the precinct committee officers in the Democratic Party are working really hard to get people to go to the convention, whatever it looks like. And I believe that my guess is, I don't know, I haven't looked into it. My guess is that the electors have to cast their votes to get basically the votes for Biden or whoever is going to be nominee.
Right.
To have it, Truman, to your point, I think, you have to have a process for that.
Right.
I've not looked into the details.
Yeah. So is that a legal requirement or is that a party requirement? And are they different?
Those are all party rules. There are no legal sort of requirements for that. Parties set up their own sort of structures and their own rules. But yeah, I mean, all of that stuff needs to happen, but it doesn't have to happen at the, you know, Atlantic City Convention Center and everybody in one building. It can happen just like we're doing this. So yeah, I think it'll happen, but I don't think it'll happen in physical proximity.
You know, and politically, it has to happen. Just imagine if it's like, they never even had a convention.
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
On the political side of this, I'm seeing some interesting things. You mentioned, Susan, I agree that, right, the convention is a rallying point to bolster the Democrats. But what's happening on the other side is apparently the Iowa GOP governor split with Trump over the plans, right, to open up the state economy and so on. And apparently the governor's ratings are going up right now.
Oh, excellent.
Nice. That'll help our cause in the long run.
Did you say it was a GOP governor?
A GOP governor of Iowa, yes. Hmm. And hey, one other thing, I hate to sort of drag us backwards, but I do want to go back to the coronavirus pandemic and the crazy conspiracy theories. So I talked to a woman in North Carolina just earlier or late last week. She talked about these protests to open up the government, and she called them super spreader protests to spread the virus. Well, lo and behold, I saw on my news feed this morning that the North Carolina protest leader, guess what, is now staying at home because showing symptoms of the coronavirus. That's the headline.
See.
Has the coronavirus. So crazy.
But. Darwinian.
Once again. And I also heard, I'm not sure this is confirmed, that COVID cases spiked in Georgia after the protests as well. I can't attribute that to any reliable source necessarily.
Charles Darwin.
Charles.
It's a good source.
Getting a lot of play this morning. Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating to watch over the next 3 to 4 weeks when you see states like Texas and Georgia, you know, rolling back sort of these restrictions on meetings and getting out. And their curves are still going up. You know, whether those curves continue to go up and accelerate in their rise, which I suspect is going to happen, versus what's happening here in Washington State. And I think Washington State's a good example of what can happen. Essentially, the curve is flattened. It's beginning to go down. You know, if the governor, like he did yesterday, talked about sort of slow openings of various sectors, there's ways to get through this and ways to get through it very successfully. In my sense, it's going to be very interesting to see how the Washington, California, Oregon sort of process works versus Texas, you know, North Carolina, Georgia mm-hmm. process works. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see. Let me throw this in. I saw a meme from, I have several friends on Facebook who are Trumpsters, much like Truman does.
No, yes, I do as well.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting. One of the memes that's going around right now in Trump circles is they're looking at all the states that have Republican governors and the number of COVID-19 cases versus the number of Democratic states and the number of cases. And it's sort of like, I mean, all of the states with all of the cases are Democratic-led. And the Republican leadership states have very few cases. So they're saying, look, the Dems have blown it again. So it's interesting to think about.
That is interesting. Of course, the blue states tend to have the largest concentration of urban environments as well, where people
You're being rational here.
Sorry about that. Kevin, do you have something rational to say or irrational?
I just wanted to go back, you know, we're sort of ridiculing the people who are out there exposing themselves to the virus. But the thing that I think is important for us to all understand is in King County, the numbers are still going up. They're starting to slow down, but they are still increasing. We're not at the top of the curve yet. And that we see things happening and think, well, maybe it's okay. You know, it's not yet okay. That's the important thing, is we need to keep letting people know to stay safe, take care of themselves. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Our own Governor Inslee has made a pact with, as you mentioned, Bruce, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, California governors to slowly relax restrictions, including outdoor recreation statewide. Mm-hmm. So fishing, hunting, golf are relaxed, but we haven't heard anything from King County yet, which is what's going to directly affect activity here on Vashon. So what are your thoughts about that? Do you think King County is holding back? Do you think that the governor's easing of outdoor recreation is too quick? What are your thoughts?
Well, didn't Inslee originally say May 4th? And so we're not even to that particular marker, you know, and I think everybody's trying to find, don't you think, some kind of sane compromise. I don't know what the balance should be on there. I'm sure chafing to be outside more, you know. So I don't know. I think that King County is being wise to kind of not override something currently in place at this moment. you know, wait and see kind of what the general reaction is and what that curve is. I think we should be really careful.
How do you feel, Kevin, how do you feel personally about this?
Well, you know, in Vashon, we're certainly a very different part of King County, our most populous county, largest urban center in the state. The numbers are starting to slow down, but they haven't yet hit a peak. So I think it's wise for King County to be cautious just because the realities of our density and how people, you know, higher propensity for mass transit. And that is true of most of the blue states. Also, the red states tend to be more spread out and, you know, people don't tend to associate in transit situations. I think that's why New York is such a huge, huge challenge.
By the way, I'm looking online here and that it's saying that William Barr is, he's directing his prosecutors to look for state and local stay-at-home orders that go too far. So they're looking at, you know.
What does that mean?
Well, if you look at the constitutionality, if that's a correct word, of these stay-at-home orders, I mean, we have the government telling us we have to close our businesses, yada, yada, yada. So they're looking at the legalities, see if some states went too far. So I find that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it all jumps back to that traditional sort of local, state, federal sort of relationship.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and any time that there's a cookie cutter, one plan fits everything, it's never going to work adequately. I mean, what works for Capitol Hill doesn't necessarily work for Vashon or work for someplace in Eastern Washington. What you need is sort of guidelines. And unfortunately, what the federal government has done is punted on guidelines to the states. And my sense is what we need are strong national guidelines. When you look at places like New Zealand and Australia that are on the road to eliminating this virus in their countries because they have strong national direction with local implementation. That's what you need. And right now, what we're seeing in Washington State is I think Inslee's trying to walk that line of sort of being able to loosen up in areas where it's applicable, but also keep things tight where loosening things up are going to be a disaster. And so it's a balancing act. And unfortunately, we don't have adequate national leadership at this point, and so it's devolved to the states to be the leaders.
Kevin?
I'm glad you brought up New Zealand and Australia, Bruce, for the one reason is that they are entering their winter, which we will be doing in another 5 months from now, 4 months. So their process to manage coronavirus and the seasonal flu may be a template for the rest of the world, and we'll have to face that too.
Right.
Lynn?
The thing that I'm the most interested in is the idea of trying to get to some manner of universal community testing and tracing and kind of really doing some backtracking in terms of, you know, who has and has had this virus and quarantine those people. I don't think necessarily the most vulnerable people should have to still be quarantined. You know, it's sort of shunning the elders, the most at risk people. I hate that. You know, whereas I'd rather know who has had the virus and, you know, make sure they're getting taken care of.
Kevin?
Yeah, I agree. We're being singled out, right, as a population. I will say that I keep going back to this fact that we don't have a virus, we don't have a vaccine. The numbers can start looking good, like, hey, it looks like it's safe to go out now. And that may be true in general, but it may not be true specifically to an individual who might have underlying health conditions. So don't be swayed by the fact the numbers look better. Your personal risk is unchanged as far as your ability to survive this. So I think people need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, it kind of becomes a personal decision at some point. And how many of us are ready to step out on the possibility that we might catch the virus? How many of you personally are ready to step out to accept a new normal, whatever that might look like. What do you think?
Well, I go back to what Lynn was talking about. I mean, the key to beating the virus is testing, you know, and I mean, every national health expert is saying, you know, you need universal testing. Then you know who has had it, who's a potential carrier, who's vulnerable because they haven't had it. And then you can make decisions. But we have, you know, as on a national level, the testing has been so stuffed up and so inadequate. And then to kick the ball to the states who don't have the mechanisms to do the testing, don't have the laboratories, don't have the sort of resources in place, is just criminal in my sense. And so what we need is a strong national policy to have tests, to have them universally available. That's what's happening in Australia and New Zealand. Of course, Australia's got 25 million people and New Zealand's got 5 million people, much easier to do. But if the will is there, it can be done. Until we have a universal test to know whether you've got the pathogen in your bloodstream or not, and whether you're a potential carrier or whether you're safe from the virus, we can't make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And so we need to stay in the kind of relaxed, relaxing lockdown that we're in right now into the next 3-4 months, into August, September. And then by October, winter's going to come and a new flu season's going to come. Yeah. That's what happened in 1918. There was minor outbreaks in the spring. It sort of disappeared in the summer. And then October and November came back and it kicked butt in big, terrible ways. 670,000 people in the United States died. Most of those died in the fall of 1918.
Wow. Well, to me, the current policy of having it be so politicized and privatized so that 50 states are on eBay bidding against each other for whatever boxes of Q-tips there are and plastic bags and whatever the solution is that the stuff is transported in, you know, kind of ridiculous private model that just doesn't work. Talk about something that, you know, should have been handled on a national level just blows actually my mind. It's so incompetent. I can't imagine it's happening. It is.
Kevin? Oh.
Well, and to the, I totally agree. And to that point, right, we're now starting to see the exposés of how much press, how much content in the presidential daily briefing about what was happening in China, about how the risks of a pandemic, the risks of the threat to the country, that is now all starting to come out and be recorded and chronicled in the news. And to your point, Lynn, it is clearly this president tried to wish it away, brush it aside, and not act on it. And here we are.
You know, to that point of the incompetence of our federal response to the pandemic, the privatization of stockpiles or the lack thereof, looking ahead to November, say, let's say the flu and the virus work together to kick our national butt and the Democrats win, what sort of options do you think a President Biden might have? What sort of tools are left for him to deal with in the federal government when he inherits this mess in November, or he would actually take office in January?
Well, the tools are all there. They're just not being used.
They know? Are there.
I mean, you got the CDC, you got experts like Fauci and Bricks, and staffs behind them that are fairly deep still. You know, they haven't been eliminated, but they haven't been given the authority and they haven't been given the charge to go out and do it. You've got the U.S. military sitting there. I mean, the military, the National Guard, has been mobilized in small cases to set up hospitals and things like that. But, you know, you've got mechanisms in place. It's just you've got a leadership that doesn't believe in using the mechanisms of the state to benefit the interest of the people. And so right now we're seeing disasters.
Kevin?
And so there's two tools, as I understand it, the Defense Production Act, which tells industry to produce the masks and the swabs and the tests and the reagents and all the things we need. And there's the Defense Services Act, I believe, not sure about that, but that mobilizes the amazing capabilities and logistics of our military service to actually do response. And Trump has talked about those things, but when it comes down to really making those things happen, he says, well, you know, we talked to this company and we were going to threaten them with the Defense Production Act, but then they came along and they did the right thing. Well, that doesn't really mobilize.
Right. Exactly.
So what you're saying is that the supply chains exist for the products that we need, but they're not being used.
Well, it's a political thing, don't you think? He doesn't want to be thought a socialist. And nationalizing the means of production. I think it's a very simple political dodge.
Yeah. Right. And so one thing we have happening right now is farmers are, you know, giving away potatoes, right? Because they can't sell them. There's no market. All the, you know, big restaurant chains who bought that product are now no longer buying. And we don't have the distribution network to the grocery stores. Well, the Defense Service Agent, if that's the right one, the military, could come in and create a distribution network that would get the food to the people so it doesn't rot in storage. So those are things that the president needs to do to really make this, make it different. But I don't think he will. I think he's not capable of making that happen.
Bruce.
I mean, this whole last 45 minutes have been kind of downer in a way because we're confronting real problems. Let me shift this a second and just talk about what I see happening on Vashon is very, very positive kind of things. Vashon, be prepared, daily situation reports coming out, a testing center being set up. We've got mechanisms in place. We've got individual groups coming together to make masks to distribute to the island for free. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going on that are very, very positive in local communities. And there's no reason that couldn't be going on a national level. We just don't have national leadership right. who have a sense of how to mobilize that. That's the change that will come with a new president, as a new president will come in with a sense of mobilizing the incredible innovativeness of the American people to deal with this problem, rather than miring themselves in their self-pity about, you know, people not liking them.
Thank you. I think that's a great note for us to move toward a close on. I have one quick question for all of you. Maybe it's a poll. Who do you think will be Biden's vice presidential candidate choice? Just a name. Anybody got a name?
Harris.
What was that last?
Harris.
What did you say, Kevin?
Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris.
Stacey Abrams.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
He promised a woman.
Amy Klobuchar.
I think we have a little ditty on which to go out with, and it's a parody on my favorite song.
No, we don't.
Thanks for listening, folks. This has been the Brown Briefing.
Hey, we don't have that. I'm sorry.
We don't have that.
No,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
We'll have it next week. We'll have it next week. I promise.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Maybe we have Harbor Lights?
Yeah, it's coming. See you guys all next week.
Thank you.